Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Here on Driven to Business, we're curious about a number of things. We like to talk about a variety of topics as it relates to business and as often relates to life, because I don't know that you really separate the two that much. Erica Anderson, a person that I follow on Twitter, and I'm always interested in what she has to say, she recently did an article for the Harvard Business Review called Learning to Learn, and the title kind of caught my attention, and I read it, and I sent her a note and told her that I enjoyed it, and she had told me it actually came out of a book. It was an excerpt from a book that she wrote. But the idea of learning to learn, you know, we've talked to her many times about the problem in business of business leaders becoming too self-confident, and perhaps even to use Jim Collins' term, too engaged with hubris brought on by their own success. In other words, arrogance, which comes from success, meaning you've been successful in some area, perhaps even very successful, which is great. But the downside of it is that all of a sudden you think that you now know everything about that area. And the problem with that is you stop learning because you stop looking around. And so she did a good article on this, I think, about learning to learn. I was going to share a little bit of it with you this morning as here on Driven to Business as we talk. By the way, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. So check us out there. You can also go to eddiemayfield.com. There's almost always a blog associated with every show. Just go there, click on the blog tab, and check that out. You know, I don't know if we live in a more complex society than ever before or not. We sort of all assume that we do. But even if you go back to the 17th and 18th centuries, philosophers even then were decrying how complex life had become. And they were saying that there's too many books, so many books that we can't read and know everything. Well, little did they know, I think, what was going on today. Well, whether you believe or not that today is the most complex society ever, and honestly, in terms of computers and things of that sort, it certainly is, but I don't know that it necessarily is in many other ways. Life has always been fairly complex for a lot of people. Organizations today, however, if you're leading any kind of a business organization or any organization, we certainly do remain in a state of flux, don't we? And, you know, things are consolidating. New industries and new technologies are emerging. Markets change. I think if anything today, I would say, is they do change perhaps faster than they did before. I think it's a documented fact that product life cycles, for instance, are much shorter. You can think about it yourself in this way for a moment. I remember when the VCR first came out, and what a revolutionary thing that was when it came out. And as some of you will remember, the technology that was most, that it seemed to be most dominant when it first came out was what we call Betamax. It was made by Sony, which was pretty high fidelity for that time, video and audio, but for whatever reason, a little more complex, and it didn't catch on to the VHS architecture of videotape caught on. But now, when's the last time most of you probably don't anymore go and rent VHS tapes to put in your player, assuming you still have a player? I don't know for sure that I even have one anymore. But and cassette tapes in your car, think about that a moment. You know, modern cars probably will not, new ones don't now, and for sure ones in the future probably are not going to have cassette players, audio cassette players in there. So that's changed. And, you know, now I was talking with some folks the other night about our, you know, we all like sometimes to look at my mom and dad's house. We look at old picture albums of my grandparents and perhaps their parents and aunts and uncles and cousins and so forth from many years ago. Well, what are we going to be doing about that now? You know, since most of us do not print out pictures, and, you know, we can say, oh, well, you know, I've got mine stored on a DVD or something. Well, I can pretty much assure you that in 20 years, You're going to own nothing that will play a DVD, probably. I could be wrong, but I doubt it. I doubt that's wrong. And so those are the kinds of things that technology does change fast, even in our personal lives and affect our personal lives, much less in business, much less in business. Erica, in this article, came up with four attributes for leaders that she says will helps them to excel in the ability to learn and to adapt to the changes around them. And let me identify those for you. The first one she talks about is aspiration. I'll talk about each of these separately. She talks about aspiration, self-awareness, curiosity, and vulnerability. And naturally, some of these things come more easy to some folks than they do others. You know, and that's true of everything in life, isn't it? It may be that public speaking may not come easy to you, but it's necessary that you learn how to speak publicly. So it's a skill you have to learn. But nonetheless, you do need to do it. Let's start with aspiration. Aspiration is the idea that we want to learn something, that we aspire to things. And, if we don't do that, if we don't try to aspire to learn new things, then we never will learn new things. So again, we need to aspire to things. And I would see, as a person that's gotten older now, I sometimes coach senior citizens that perhaps it's time you learned a new skill. Perhaps it's time that you learn how to do something you've never done before, like take piano lessons, for instance, or something like that. Because that's an exercise of the brain and the body that has a great deal of positive effect on yourself to aspire to do something you haven't done before. Well, in business, we can aspire to be better leaders. We can aspire to learn new technologies. We can aspire to grow our companies. But that's the first step to learning, is to aspire to it. The idea that we have to be... do it. Now, great learners can raise their aspiration level. They can raise the level that they do that on. And that's the key to it, because a lot of us are sometimes guilty of resisting development. I find this myself, I've come this way in computers. I used to really, in our company, fight upgrading software and computers. I fought it. Like, I would just see, that's just... these software companies are ripping us off, telling us to buy new stuff when the old one works fine. And there may be a lot of truth to that. I'm not convinced there's not a lot of truth to it. However, on the other hand, if the rest of the market is moving toward a new technology and you're unable to take advantage of that because you're stuck back too many generations back, and I realize there's some wisdom that's come into effect here. You don't have to buy every new thing that comes out either. That's a problem as well. But because I didn't want to learn a new software, for instance, I would resist going with that new software, even when that new software would actually be beneficial to the company. Now, I have hopefully learned my lesson about that. And that's one way to think about it. It's, what are the benefits of learning this new software? Well, if there's no benefits to learning it, obviously, then maybe you should learn it. But if you can look at the benefits of it, why would we want to do that? We always do, though, in the beginning, most of us will focus on the negative, won't we? We will unconsciously sort of reinforce our own lack of aspiration or our lack of wanting to aspire. But when we want to do something, like, I want to be a better guitar player. I don't play professionally by any means, but I like to play. And consequently, I want to improve. And because I want to improve, I will practice. I will pay attention to new techniques, how things are done. And in your life, there's probably something like that in your life. Well, also in our business life, I want to be a better leader of business. I want our company to be a top-notch company. I want us to explore new markets. I want to capture new markets. And consequently, because I want that, and because a lot of the people that I work with want it, and together we want it, and together we aspire to it, that's a very powerful thing. We then begin to figure out the how. It's sometimes it's the what first. You know that? It's the what Figure out the what first. And don't get too worried about the how until you first clearly define the what it is you want to do, and then you begin to work on the how, and the how gets easier. If you get that out of order, if you start dealing with the how first, that's probably going to be demotivating to you to get that done. You know, many of us have been very hesitant in these areas. The second thing she talked about was self-awareness. This is hard for every one of us, is to be self-aware. I've heard it said before that you often are not sitting in the best seat to judge your own motivations. Other people are. And that's why other people sometimes can provide a lot of feedback to us that we really were unaware of how we're being perceived or how we look or sound when we say something. And so we need to have other people to help us to do it. There was a research done by a guy named David Dunning at Cornell University among the college professors there to ask them how they were doing. And 94% of them, that's 94% of them, reported they were doing above average work. Well, that's not what students said. That's not what their peers said. That's not what anybody except them said. So it basically means they're completely unaware, they're not self-aware of their own shortcomings. But they're not alone in that. Most of us do that. You know, we have to, people that learn how to be self-aware, I get, my wife kids me sometimes about talking to myself, but some of the talks I have myself are good talks. I'll talk myself into things and perhaps even fuss at myself a bit about something that I need to be fussed at about. But, you know, people who evaluate themselves most accurately, again, this is back to Erica Anderson's article here, they accept that their perceptions are biased. I mean, face it. Your perceptions of yourself are biased. Mine are. They all are. We, most of the time, think more highly of ourselves than we should. Now, there's the opposite side of that, too. Some of us, in some areas, think more lowly of ourselves than we should. We don't have enough self-confidence in some area. But I'm talking now about people that are probably have aspired to leadership positions. Those kinds of people tend to be very self-confident and what they're doing. And let's think about it a minute. When you're first criticized about something, what's your initial response? Well, it's to become defensive. And if you criticize someone, you should expect that to be their first response, is to become defensive. But after we look at it a little bit, perhaps we will decide that criticism was valid after all. More to come. We'll be talking about more of this on Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking about learning to learn. I'm using, I'm sort of referring, not entirely, but a bit to a very fine article in the Harvard Business Review by a lady named Erica Anderson, who I follow on Twitter. And she had written this article in March of 2016, and it's pretty good. She was talking about the attributes of people that do learn, and she listed four, and the first one was aspiration, in other words, aspiring to be a little better learner. And, you know, to put it in layman's terms, you need to want to learn. You need to aspire. I mean, more than you are. If you don't do that, you know, then nothing's going to happen. And the second one she listed was self-awareness. And we were talking about that as we went into the break. The idea of being self-aware is something that I've had a problem with, and probably you do, is that, you know, we view ourselves differently than other people. Because I think it was Zig Ziglar that said it many years ago, you know, we judge other people by their actions. We look at their actions and we judge them. But we judge ourselves by our motivations. And we'll probably all find that true. You know, if somebody else is late to something that you're running, you're immediately very annoyed to them. Well, they're late, and so you judge them as being, you know, not all that cool because they're late to this. But when you're late to something, well, I meant to be there on time. There was traffic. This happened, that happened. I meant to be. You're excusing yourself by your motivation, and the truth of the matter is, we need to cut everybody a little slack. But again, that's that whole thing of being self-aware. Understand how that we look at things. And when we're criticized, when someone criticizes us, the first thing we do immediately, it's a natural reaction for almost everyone, is to become defensive. But people that are learners, people that have learned how to learn, don't stay there. Maybe that's your initial response. It is for most of us. It's very hard not to make that a sort of almost a reactionary response. But afterwards, perhaps as we begin to think it over, you begin to think, okay, is that justified? Am I really whatever he said? You know, and then you, and it could be that even after you do the self-examination, perhaps the person is making the criticism is wrong. That's possible. Not everybody that criticizes you is correct. But on the other hand, maybe there is something you should learn from it. And that's people that are self-aware, that sort of have these talks with themselves. In other words, they just sort of ask when someone criticizes, okay, is that accurate? Is that accurate criticism? If it is, what am I going to do about it? You know, you hear football coaches and others talk about the idea of being overconfident. That's one of the things they try to tell their teams. Don't be overconfident. You know, it's a common thing in sports, particularly in football, I think, you're a highly ranked team and you're playing a team that's not very highly ranked. And so you sort of look past them to the next week when you're going to be playing another ranked team. And then what happens is the unranked team knocks them out. That's happened so many times. And the reason it happens is you're overconfident. You're not even aware that you're being overconfident. You've got to play that game every Saturday against the guy that you're there against. And again, the idea is of being self-aware. Be aware. I remember a story that when Harry Truman became president after Roosevelt was killed, and he was sitting at his desk, and his friend, and at that time Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, came in. And Sam, the story goes that Sam said, "Harry, you know, now that you're here, you're going to have all kind of people telling you how great you are, and everything you do that you're going to say is great, and you're going to be the smartest guy to ever live, and every idea you've got is great, and everything you do is great, and you know everything about everything." And he said, "But Harry, we both know it ain't true." And it's good to have a friend like that, isn't it? A guy to just pull you back down to earth and say, "Hey, you're the same guy you were before you got in this spot." Many of us in leadership positions, it's all, you get in a leadership position, it's like, oh my goodness, now what? And we don't admit that to many people, but that's how we feel. Well, that's not all bad. The idea of being able to look at yourself, ask hard questions of yourself. So she talked about four things, one of them being aspiration, aspire to be a great learner. Second one being self-awareness. And the third one is the one that intrigues me the most, really. Curiosity. I love a saying that's attributed to Albert Einstein, who said, "I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious." And great learners are curious. They want to know how things work. They don't just accept that things work. They want to know how. You know, when I was a kid getting into electronics, I was very interested in how, even things like a toaster, how does it work? Why does it get hot when you put electricity there? I remember as a kid taking an electric plug-in wire, stripping it back off an old lamp, putting it around nails and shoving it at each end of a hot dog and turning on and plugging it in to see what would happen when you ran current through a hot dog. Well, of course, what happens is it gets hot and boils it up. It was a little lesson in physics I learned that just because I was very curious what's going to happen when you do that. Now, curiosity can... You know, we all hear the story, curiosity kill the cat. I guess you can go over-curious. But most of us are not over-curious. Most of us are under-curious. And you can't learn without being curious. That's why kids can learn so well. They're curious about everything. How does this work? And when we look at this world around us and just sort of marvel at it as to how things are, and we begin to just ask ourselves, how does that work? And in relationships, why do people respond the way they do? That's a great thing in sales. Why do people respond like they do? That's the way we learn things. The idea of how and why, and I wonder. The idea of being curious. Great learners retain that childhood drive all through their lives. They remain curious. They want to know how things work. And the result of that is they learn. They continue to learn. I'm going to run over a little chart that she put in her article here, and I'll just go through it. Here's what she talked about. Changing your inner narrative. How do you talk to yourself? Here's her suggestion for changing that. And she's two columns. One of them is unsupportive self-talk, and the other one is supportive self-talk. So we'll call it good and bad. So the bad talk is, I don't need to learn this. And the good talk is, what would my future look like if I did? That's a good question. I don't want to learn this. Well, what would be the great benefit if I did learn it? And you may find that it's something you do need to learn. Another unsupportive talk. I'm already fine with this. And the supportive talk is, am I really well, how do I compare to my peers? You know, I'll get to thinking I'm a good guitar player until I get with someone that really is a good guitar player. And all of a sudden it points out to me, I'm not that good. And it makes me try to be better. Unsupportive self-talk, one of my most unfavorite things for anybody to say, this is boring. And interesting, I wonder why others find it interesting. I'll stop here a minute. You know, I had an opportunity to go watch one of my granddaughters in a little interpretive dance thing the other night. Now, I've always said interpretive dance is totally boring. I have no interest in that whatsoever. That's what I've always said. Well, honestly, I've never done it before. And I guess to ask why, how, but there are people who find it interesting. So the question is, why do they find it interesting? If they find it interesting, what is it about it they find interesting? And perhaps it's something I could find interesting. Well, you know, when I sat down and went to that and sat through this hour-long performance of interpretive dance, I actually kind of liked it at the end. I thought it was very artistic. And by the end of it, I sort of liked it. Now, I'm still not a big fan of interpretive dance, but I understand it better than I did, and I like it better than I did. And you might find that way, too. If there's something about in your world, in business, that you just find absolutely boring, but you find other people do find that exciting, perhaps the question is, why do they find that exciting? Perhaps that's something that you could learn from. And the other unsupportive self-talk is, I'm terrible at this. The supportive talk is, I'm making beginner mistakes, but I'll get better. Listen, no one learns anything or gets better at anything without making mistakes. I don't care any field you put that in. I don't care if it's sports or business or music or being, you know, relationships, you know, any way you want to put that. You are going to make mistakes. And, you know, negative talk to yourself is, I'm terrible at this, and the implication is I can't get any better at this. Whereas supportive talk is, I'm making beginner mistakes. Yes, I acknowledge that, but I'm getting better. And that's the way you want to do it. More to come. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. By the way, to remind you, we are streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes, so check us out there. Been talking about the idea of learning in business. I've sort of been using an article by Erica Anderson from the Harvard Business Review. You know, it annoys me sometimes to be around people who went to college, did well in college, perhaps even got an advanced degree, and somehow thinks that makes them an expert in things, and that somehow by having this a master's degree or even a doctorate, whatever, that there's no need to learn anything more, that they know everything. And learning is just not something that is necessary for their success or even their own happiness. And they could not be more wrong than that. Formal education is a great thing in any form that you wish to put that in. It's a great thing to learn how to do things. But really, I think the primary thing about college, at least for me, was that you learned how to learn. I can't quantify this in any way, but I can promise you I've learned a lot more after getting out of college than I ever learned in college. And anyone my age that doesn't say that probably has not had much success in their life. So be a learner. Well, Ms. Anderson points out she's got four traits she talks about that lifelong learners have. The first is aspiration, the idea of aspiring to something. You got to aspire to learn, aspire to know new things, aspire to be better than you are. The other one is self-awareness. Be aware of your shortcomings and your strengths, for that matter, but be self-aware. The third one, which I found very interesting, is curiosity. Be curious about things. Want to know how things work. That can be, you know, something we need to cultivate ourselves. You know, as kids, we do that naturally, but as we get older, you know, we get a little too cool to be awed by things, and we decide, you know, yeah, I know everything, and that's not that beautiful painting doesn't awe me anymore. And, you know, I'm not concerned how that car works because I'll just get in and turn it on. Well, that's a good way to fail in life. Be curious about how things work. It's a mark of learning how to learn. And then she puts another one. It's very interesting. It's vulnerability. So it's aspiration, self-awareness, curiosity, and last one being vulnerability. And this may be the hardest one of all for us. You know, once we become good at anything, no matter what it is, once we get some accolades for being good, like you've had some success in business, you're recognized for being an expert or being very good in some field, and most of us probably are, some skill. Well, it's kind of demeaning to us, I think, in a way, to let ourselves be vulnerable and go back to being not good at other things. But the truth of the matter is, if you don't go through the period of being not good at something, you're never going to be good at anything. And if you only do what you're good at doing, if that's your whole life, only doing what you're good at doing, and you never allow yourself to be vulnerable enough to fail somewhere, to try things you haven't tried before, then your growth's going to stop, and you're going to stop learning, because you cannot learn whether you are out there. I heard I think it was an interview with Glenn Campbell, I'm not sure about this, many years ago, and they were talking about practicing and rehearsing guitar, and Glenn is just a fabulous guitar player, as many of you know, and he said something, I'm not quoting him exactly, but he said something to the effect of that when he practices, when he rehearses, he doesn't rehearse what he knows. He always is trying to do some lick he can't do. I can't imagine a guitar lick Glenn Campbell can't do or couldn't do, but that's what he would do. He would practice things that he couldn't do because it stretched him and it made him better. Well, that's the difference in a really professional musician, someone that really wants to be good at it, and somebody that just hacks around at it, who sits down and plays all they play is what they already know. But that's the idea of to be vulnerable. Hang yourself out there where you hit wrong notes, where you sound awful in front of somebody, you know, when you're practicing. I don't mean at a performance. But hang yourself out there a little bit. Admit to people that you don't know everything. You know what? They know it already. Whether you admit it to them or not, they already know you don't know everything. So you may as well admit it. You know, and all that comes along with that, feeling awkward. You know, you've been trying something new, you're not good at it, you feel very awkward, don't you? I know I do. You feel very awkward. You feel kind of dumb. We're having to stop and ask, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about questions. And basically just making ourselves vulnerable. But we need to go through that. And the mindset you have when you go through it, and Erica Anderson points this out in her great article here, is that the idea of I'm going to be bad to start with because I've never done it. But I know I can learn to do it over time. I'm that way with many things. I've learned how to do a number of things in my life. So when I have this self-awareness talk with myself, I'll say, okay, I'm pretty crummy at this right now, but I've never done it before. If I stay with this, I can learn to do this. I know I've learned things before. I can learn to do this. And that's the attitude to take with it. You know, in our company, one of the things we do tell our people is that you're allowed to make mistakes here. You're allowed to make mistakes. It's impossible to grow a company without some mistakes. It's not possible. If you think you're going to run a company, there's going to be no mistakes made in that company. Well, you've never run a company, and besides, you're just not very intelligent. That's not how it works. Mistakes are going to be made when we getting that things like that going. It's so easy, though, for us to fall back and say, I'm going to just do what I'm comfortable doing, and that's as far as I'm going with any of that. And that's a terrible thing to do. Hey, staying on this curiosity kick just for a minute, there's another Harvard Business Review that sort of caught my eye. It's by a guy named Tomas Chamorro Premusic. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. He's CEO of Hogan Assessment Systems, and he's professor of business psychology at the University College of London and a faculty member at Columbia University. And he has an article entitled, in the Harvard Business Review, entitled curiosity is as important as intelligence. Now, that's a controversial statement, isn't it? Curiosity is as important as intelligence. And he starts off by talking about people that we do, in fact, live in a complex world, in complex situations. And people that succeed are people that can handle this complexity. They don't have all the answers to everything. But nonetheless, they can operate in a complex, multifaceted environment. Some people seem to be able to do that better. And the question is why? Well, part of it is, he divides it down, part of it is IQ. And we all know about IQ. IQ is sort of a mental horsepower, if you stop and think about it this way. It's a measured ability to how well you think on primarily complex tasks. You could put it in a way, this is not a great analogy, you could in some ways put it to what kind of a CPU is in a computer. You know, you got a small, slow CPU in a computer. The computer will function, but it can handle complex tasks. Well, it's the same way with IQ. Now, you can't do much about your IQ. You're kind of born with it. The good news is IQ is not the determinant of success. It is a determinant of success. You can't get around that. People that a high IQ enables people to solve novel problems more quickly. Now, people with high IQs can also be lazy and do nothing in their life, and we all know stories of that. And you might even know somebody that you suspect has a very high IQ but has not been successful in their life because they just don't have any drive. They're smart, and that's as far as it goes. But IQ is a good predictor of performance on complex tasks. There's no doubt about that. So IQ, that's one thing. You know, if you think about it a minute, complex environments have more information. They're richer in information. And so it creates, if you could sort of think of, again, as a computer, you know, that little meter, what you look at, how fast your CPU is running, a complex situation with more information means the CPU is having to work a little harder. It's having to use more of the resources of the CPU, if you can kind of picture this on your computer. Well, people with high IQ have more of that resource. So consequently, they can handle those tasks a little better. And it helps. He gets a little test in here. I don't know that I can do this, but he says one little way of checking your own IQ is to try memorizing a phone number while asking someone for directions and remembering your shopping list. In other words, try all those things at once. A complex situation like that, I don't think I'd do that well. But see how you would do. The other thing you've got, that's IQ. There's another thing we refer to as EQ. This was described a number of years ago. But EQ stands for emotional quotient. IQ is intelligence quotient. EQ is emotional quotient. And that concerns our ability to perceive, control, and express emotions. It's the kind of guy, you can have a very smart guy who's got a high IQ and very low EQ. It's a guy that is very smart and answers questions in a way that sounds rude, even when he doesn't mean to be rude. It's because he doesn't have the EQ to understand how he's being perceived. That's a low EQ. EQ is the ability to not only understand other people's emotions, but to understand how you're being perceived by other people. That's an emotional quotient. It's a key ingredient for interpersonal skills. And in business, we've talked many times in here, relationships are extremely important in business. In fact, the great sales guru Jeffrey Gitmer goes to say that if you lose a sale to someone else, it almost always means they have a better relationship with that customer than you do. Well, people with a low EQ have a hard time forming relationships with people because they don't understand how they're being perceived and they don't perceive other people. Now, the good news is, while it's very hard to change IQ, you can improve your EQ. So we can all work on that a little bit. So that's something to think about. And you know, even in hiring, we hire in our company for EQ, even if we don't express it like that. We're hiring for interpersonal skills as well as technical skills. And everybody in a company hiring that I know of says the exact same things. Hey, more to come. Stick around. You're with Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back with the final segment. Don't go away. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad that you're here. Been talking today about the idea of learning and being a lifelong learner. And I'd use one of Erica Anderson's Great Harvest Business Review article. And I was using another article here right before the break, Harvard Business Review. I don't just read the Harvard Business Review, but it is, if you don't read it, you should go there. It's a fascinating place to go and learn. An article by Thomas Chamorro Premuzic, and I'm probably saying it wrong, called Curiosity is as Important as Intelligence. And he talks in there about the three Qs: IQ, which is intelligence quotient, EQ, which is an emotional quotient, and finally one that I've not seen before that he had in there, and he calls it CQ, curiosity quotient. As a guy that grew up with ham radio and also as a guy that did dot in the Coast Guard, CQ back in Morse code days meant calling everybody. It's da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's what you'd be tapping out on a key there. And that meant calling everybody, and you want to talk to anybody that will talk to you out there, you're talking to them. Well, I guess in a way, your curiosity quotient, in a way, is like that, isn't it? Because it talks about having a hungry mind. I don't know what that means. Curiosity quotient, do you have a hungry mind? Do you want to know things? Not everybody does. Not everybody does. But successful people in life, people are successful in business, people that run businesses well have hungry minds. They want to know what's going on in the market. How's it changing? How does it affect me? How can I best take advantage of it? I want to know how this works. If you're in a technological business, you want to know new technologies that are coming out. What about these? Are they good? Are they bad? What? How do they work? What's good about it? What's bad about it? Is this for me? Is this something I should be involved with? Is this something I should not be involved with? There was a hungry mind. I want to know. You know, everybody that you meet, this goes back to what Erica Anderson was talking about as well, being vulnerable. You know, everybody you meet, there's one way to look at life. I had a good friend in Texas who used to tell me this all the time, and we used to sort of talk about this. Everybody that you meet knows something you don't know. Everybody. I don't care who it is or what their station in life is. They know something you don't. And if you're a curious person and you have a hungry mind and you engage them in conversation, well, then you try to learn from them. What does this guy know that I don't know? And when he begins talking about what he does at work, you're interested in him. Now, this goes back to emotional intelligence, to the EQ, the idea that you know how to be interested in people, because people like being interested in them. Do you know that? When you're trying to build a relationship, people want to know that you're interested in them. You're not interested in using them. You're interested in them. That makes a big deal. Oh, part of the idea of being curious is that is to be inquisitive and open to new things. Now, people with high CQ tend to generate a lot of new ideas. They can also be annoying to you sometimes. If you got a person with a high CQ in your organization, they may be constantly asking you, why are we doing this? And they're not meaning it in a bad way. They're just saying, they're trying to think through how this works. They're trying to say, how's it work? You know, we did this. Why don't we do that here? And what I've had to learn to my dismay sometimes is if I can't explain why we're doing that, that probably means we don't have a good reason for doing that. And it probably means we shouldn't be doing it. And so that's the value of having people with high CQs in your company. But, you know, knowledge and experience, and you gain knowledge by being curious, they translate complex situations into familiar ones eventually, right? You know, you can think about complex things you've run into them, but once you understand them, they're no longer very complex to you. And now you manage them. And according to Professor Chamorro Premuzic here, CQ is the ultimate tool, even above IQ and EQ, which is probably controversial. I don't think everyone would agree with that, but it's even above that to produce simple solutions for complex problems. And isn't that a great skill? I think of President Ronald Reagan, who had a great way to take complex things and boil them down into a couple of sentences that resonated with people. And he's not the only one by any means, but people that can do that, and you probably know people like that, that can take, they just help clarify things. you know, you're everything's all confused and nebulous, and then this person stands up to speak, and next thing you know, everything is clear to everybody because they have the ability to do that. Well, having a high curiosity quotient is one way to do that. It's the people that want to know the basics of how things work. And once you get down to the basics of it, it doesn't look that complex to you anymore when you get down on that level. Anyway, that's another great article in the Harvard Business Review. And finally today, for the time we have left, I was looking at a couple of articles in Inc. magazine. I was doing some research for the program today. I used to read Inc. a lot. I don't read as much as I used to, but I used to do that. There's a lady named Jessica Stillman who wrote an article in there. She's a contributor to them. And here's what she said. Curiosity and happiness go together. Have you ever thought about that? Curiosity and happiness go together. And as we all know, as you should know, happiness tends to make you more successful. Now, think about that a minute. Why would happiness make you more successful? Well, here's one reason. And you can think of your own life in this regard. Who do you prefer to be around? Who do you like being around? People that are happy or people that are morose and depressed all the time? If you have the opportunity to surround yourself with people, who's it going to be? People that are happy and positive or people who are negative and down all the time? Well, obviously, you're going to be around people that are happy and positive. So if you're a happy and positive person, people will want to be around you more, and consequently, you will build better relationships, and businesses are built on relationships. So absolutely, that's the way to do it. Well, she says people that are curious tend to be happier. I agree with that. People that just sort of have a look for, how in the world does that work? They just sort of have a gee-whiz attitude about things, sort of a childlike wonder. As Einstein said, a passionate curiosity about things. Those kinds of people are just, they're more fun to be around, aren't they? And consequently, we do that. Curiosity helps you learn. That goes without saying. If you're not curious about something, how could you learn anything? That's not a surprise to anybody, is it? And you can think about it just for a minute. What do you have trouble learning? Well, think back in school, the subjects you didn't like, how you had to force yourself to stay awake, and you had to force yourself to listen and take notes. But, you know, if the teacher began talking about something you were interested in, that you had wondered about, I was wondering how that worked. And all of a sudden, your energy level pops up, your attention level, your cognitive level actually peaks up. You're actually able to learn better, and all of a sudden, you can do it much better. And the other thing is that curiosity promotes empathy. Now, empathy is a big deal because curiosity helps build your empathy muscles, as she says. You know, when you actually inquire about somebody and you actually want to know about their life, you're curious about them, what they do, what they think about something, if you actually are curious about that, that's going to come across to that person as being you having a lot of empathy toward them, and they're going to love it. That's the way you build relationships. That's the way you make people feel important. The fact that you showed curiosity about their life, about them, about what they think, that builds value to them. That makes them feel good. And it's a way to build relationships. And relationships, as I've already said several times here, build business. Now, if you go into a relationship with the idea, what can I get out of it? What kind of business can I get out of this? You're probably going to strike out. People have really good skills at spotting that, and they're not going to like it. So don't do that. So just to make a very quick recap here, we've been talking about the idea of learning to learn. Be a learner. Life's a lot more fun if you're a learner. You know that? Here's the first thing. We don't know everything. I don't, you don't, no one does. So there's plenty to learn out there. You've been listening to Driven to Business. If you missed part of today's program, catch the podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We'll be back again next week. See ya.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.